if this guy can do this and like there's only a handful of people doing this in the world, maybe I can do it. And it was like a stupid idea because like I'm just a kid from Marana, Arizona. Like I graduated with like 1.8 GPA. I barely graduated. My parents were, you know, in and out of prison. Like I was told by all my teachers, there's no way I was going to amount to anything. I was most likely going to end up homeless in a trailer park or just, you know, in prison. And
hey, Wiki Hunters, welcome back to the Art of Photography podcast, where we share artists' journey and how they find hope, purpose, and happiness through photography. And today we have someone who's been in the space, not only in the photography, but as well as in the Web3 NFT space. And he is well-known, well-respected. He's been at it for a long, long time. And he actually owned two galleries as well, which is, you know, something that not many photographers nowadays have the opportunity to have. So I'd like to welcome John Knopp. How are you doing, John?
Good, good, GM. Thank you so much for having me. I love all your pro equipment there. I've got like just a Mac Studio speaker here.
Yeah, no, it's you know, I decided to invest on a microphone because it made me enjoy recording when I hear back to it. So that's the main reason.
I love it, man. It's a good setup.
Fantastic. Yeah, look, welcome. And, you know, it's good to connect with you. This is the thing that I love about Web3. You know, you connect with people very easily. You vibe really quickly and you just, you know, you make connection like there's no tomorrow, right?
Yeah, it's an interesting space. It's definitely, I've met so many like new people within, you know, like the Web3 community that I never would have met if it wasn't for like crypto and NFTs and stuff like that. So yeah, it's been an eye-opening experience to just like meet people from like all over the world.
Yeah, no, 100%. And, you know, you have, you know, very interesting story, not only through your Web3 journey, but also in your photography journey. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, there's some crazy stories that I've heard about you, and it's so cool that I get to interview you in person so that I could ask that question. But one of the things that I always like to start is, you know, the beginning, right? I think you've, well, according to your website, you know, you've been at this for about 15 years. I'm not sure if that's still pretty accurate. So do you actually change that every single year? It's like, okay, now it's 16 years. And so
I do. I have like the bio rewritten like all the time. And like this year, I recently used ChatGPT and like just went to town for like 12 hours and was just like simulating different voices and things like that and trying to find different styles. And it just came up with this just like amazing bio. And I was like, done. I love what this is written. Like, I feel like changing it up because our journey like constantly changes, and I feel like we should always update our bio, our websites, things like that. Just as like, it's kind of like a journal, right? Like it keeps track of like everything that I'm doing. That way I can remember because we do a lot of shit.
No, 100%. And I actually, you know, find inspiration in that because I'm one of those person that's really lazy to, I mean, we become photographers so that we don't write, right?
Right. That I got for ChatGPT.
Oh man, this year has been an incredible year because really of ChatGPT. It's like all of my caption now, you know, everything just inspired by ChatGPT and just change little words, you know, so that it sound like mine. But yeah, that's incredible. But to go back 15 years ago, right? What was, you know, what was that beginning like? Like, why did you fall in love with photography and decided to pursue it full time?
You know, it's funny. It's like every podcast that I do, like, I feel like the narrative changes every time because I feel like I discover like different things on like why I got into photography. Like my most recent discovery was like, you know, I was working at a job. I think I hated what I was doing. The idea of working like a 9-to-5. And, you know, if I like go back, like the beginning of like, I started working when I was like, you know, 13, and every job that I've ever had, like I didn't last more than a couple months, man. I would always get fired. Like, I'm just going to be honest. I'm terrible with customer service. That's why I became a photographer, like an outdoor photographer. Like I don't deal with people. I take pictures of trees that don't move or talk to me. It's like, it's ideal for me. And like, as I was like, you know, growing up, I found, you know, a lot of different jobs. I've held so, dude, I've worked at Taco Bell, the melting pot. I've been fired from everywhere, man. But like, I think like when I was working at this car dealership, I was taking pictures of cars as like the internet salesman. And I was just really into taking photos of the cars. Like I found like, you know, it was just very like calming. It was like, it was something about just like, you know, looking through a lens and just being able to focus on something else other than everything around me. It's just like, it would cancel out all the noise. And so for a couple of months I did this and I finally just, I think at just some point, you know, I was making great money at this car dealership and I just decided this isn't what I want to do. I you know, I could only go out like once a week because of it, you know, when you're working there, you're working like 6 days a week, 13-hour days. And it's just like, I was never able to do anything. So I finally just like one day, literally just walked in and was like, I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. I'm going to be a photographer. Everyone just laughed at me. They're like, good luck with that, bro. Like you and everybody else. And this is before Instagram, before any of that. So yeah, I just kind of like set out on a journey of being homeless and broke because there was no way I knew that I was going to make money at this. I just figured, look, it maybe could pay the bills, but at least I'm going to love what I do and enjoy my life, travel, see the world, maybe get paid for it. But regardless, even if I'm sleeping on beaches, at least I get to enjoy the sunsets. And yeah, I have to admit, like it was even to today, like let's just say, you know, like I hadn't been any success in it at all, I'd still be pretty stoked because I really do like continuously try to define success as not like how much money you make or how many, you know, galleries you built or you know, how much art. It's do you get up every single day, do what you love, no matter how many times you fail, and just keep doing it. And if you keep doing it, I know a lot of people would say that's insanity, but if you love what you're doing, then I'd say that's the biggest amount of success you could ever have because there are so many people that make so much money and sit behind a desk every single day and absolutely hate what they do and hate their lives. So I wouldn't say that's success. So I look at like any artist that is like, you know, trying to get into it and it's like, you know, just go for it. And like success will eventually come by just continuing to persevere. That is the equation for success, I feel like. So I just went like on a tangent about that.
Yeah, man, I love that story. I mean, I had a very similar story. You know, I was an engineer, and I finally walked away, right? And it was the hardest decision in my life. But it's like you say, it was just like it was worth every minute, every second of the struggle, the good and the bad. And I just love what you say there. And with you know, so. You were doing, you know, you got pretty good lifestyle, right? Working in the dealership, you know, you work your way towards that sort of lifestyle where you, like you say, you started pretty hard and you get fired and then you finally find this thing that it was kind of a nice cushion, but you decide to leave leave for photography, right? And I mean, I can relate so much when people, you know, laugh at you when they hear you about pursuing photography. I mean, when I first started my Instagram, they're like, why would people follow you? You know, like you're not in bikinis. And I was like,
you're doing bikinis.
I was like, okay, I think your feed is a little. But anyway, what I want to hear is what make you love photography so much until you want to do it over and over again and wake up to it every single day to it?
Good question. You know, it's been 15 years and I have to say like, I probably don't have like the drive, the crazy amount of drive that I used to, you know, to get up and like catch a sunset or run out and catch the waterfalls. I definitely have like chilled out quite a bit. Like on my last few trips, I've noticed that it's more of just kind of like enjoying the moments and you know, as opposed to just constantly pushing myself to capture them. But I would say like, you know, what drove me to photography, I remember first discovering like Ansel Adams' work. And I remember the first time seeing one of his black and white prints and literally getting like chills like throughout my body. And it was like, I've never like felt that before by looking at art. And I wasn't into art. I mean, obviously we're all into art, but I never really understood it. I had never studied it. I didn't understand history. I didn't even understand what made art, but there was something about this that just like resonated. And I didn't really explore that until like my, you know, like mid 20s. And it wasn't until I was dating a girl who her dad was a well-known landscape photographer. And like his art was just, it blew my mind. And I was like, if this guy can do this and like there's only a handful of people doing this in the world, maybe I can do it. And it was like a stupid idea because like I'm just a kid from Marana, Arizona. Like I graduated with like 1.8 GPA. I barely graduated. My parents were, you know, in and out of prison. Like I was told by all my teachers, there's no way I was going to amount to anything. I was most likely going to end up homeless in a trailer park or just, you know, in prison. And I was okay with, I think, that because I knew that like ultimately, as long as like I continued to do what I loved, I didn't really care what anybody told me. You know, like growing up, that was kind of like what was instilled in me. So like when I discovered photography, it really was a therapy to me because it really did like allow me to tune all the other noises out. And there was just something about traveling and, you know, going to a landscape and to nature and just the silence and just everything about it was, it really meant something to me at the time. Now, as I've gotten older, my life has become more balanced and it's not nearly as chaotic as it used to be. And because of that, I think that I don't need the therapy as much anymore. And I'm like, if you look at my Instagram or like Twitter, I don't start with, you know, landscape photographer. I start with dream chaser because that's what I've always been. Whether I'm a photographer, a filmmaker, a, you know, community maker, whatever I'm doing, I do it because I enjoy it. And that's the fun of it. So photography has always been fun. It's always, there's a love for it. There's just something about it that has always driven a passion within me. It's being told that I can't do it. It's, you know, being told that it's not possible. Being out there in the wilderness and just really enjoying those serene moments. There's just something about all of these things combined that just really made it for me. And I think I it's so hard to answer like what photography did for me, but all I can say is like, when I saw Ansel Adams' work and I got those chills as a kid, I knew that that was something I knew I probably couldn't do, but really wanted to be able to do one day. And when I finally got into my 20s, I had the confidence to be able to just chase it.
Yeah, that's incredible. And, you know, you say this, you know, over and over again about as long as I can wake up happy, it's amount to success for you, right? And I think that's incredible. And one of the quote that got me following my passion is from Steve Jobs. You know, if today were the last day of my life, would I do what I'm about to do today? And that's exactly, you know, what you say there. So I love this, right? And most people take a long, long time, you know, in their journey as a human being to find this out, that it's important to do what you love, it's so important to do what you're passionate about. And we can hear all of that passion from your story, man. You know, but how did you figure this out? So, you know, so early in your life?
That's funny that you ask that because it's like I chased photography to find happiness and it ultimately led me to a depression, you know? So like when I got into photography, I never expected the glitz and glamour of like Vegas and getting a gallery and becoming like quasi famous in Vegas and like walking on the strip and people would know me. Like I never expected that. And so like when that happened, it was like, I'm a kid from a small town who was like put in this, Vegas is not a big city, but to me, it was just gigantic. Yeah, I had never seen these tall buildings. I had never seen anything like this. And so like something about it, like sex, drugs, rock and roll, partying, I had never experienced anything like it. So I got sucked in. And what ultimately led me to opening a gallery in Minnesota, moving to the middle of nowhere, the Midwest, finding sobriety, finding myself, finding, you know, Kundalini yoga, jujitsu, all these things that helped me find like found balance. And I think like, what ultimately led me to my happiness was finding depression in Minnesota because of the fact that I was tied to this gallery that I had opened. I had investors involved. I was never able to leave this gallery. I couldn't shoot. I was given a phase one from phase one and I couldn't even go out and use it because I'm stuck in this gallery trying to run it. And I'm like missing these sunsets. And I'm like borderline, like back, like almost to the point where I'm just like, I'm gonna get back on drugs. Like, this is terrible. Like, what am I doing with my life? I'm back where I'm at. And I'm back in Vegas. I'm about to just move to Minnesota to try to make this gallery run because I'm not willing to accept failure because, you know, pride, ego, all those things can't fail. And so I'm in Vegas. I'm talking to a friend, my friend Frankie, and I go, I'm going to move to Minnesota. You know, I have a paying gig there. At least I have, you know, some money. I'm getting a salary out of it from investors. I'm at least able to survive. I can bring my family out there. And he looks at me, he goes, bro, there is no amount of money ever ever that is worth unhappiness. No amount. And that hit me so hard. And I don't know why that, I mean, everyone's been told that, but for some reason in that moment, it hit. And I said, you're right. And I said, fuck Minnesota, I'm not moving there. I'm not dealing with this. Like, I'm moving back to Vegas. I'm going to be with my family, who I haven't been with for a while. Like, I haven't seen anybody. It's just, it was really eye-opening. And because of that moment, from then on out, I decided no matter what, no matter how much money, no matter what situation, I was committed to no, and I don't know why it took that, but I was committed to never being in a situation where if I'm not happy or having fun, I'm just not going to do it because there's no point. If I was going to do that, I might as well go back to working at a job where I'm going to eventually get fired because I hate it.
That is a well put answer. And, you know, I love how, you know, we find inspiration from other people and, you know, it opens our eyes. And it's one of the reason why I love this podcast is I always learn, you know, from people's journey. And I'm sure the listeners there can find inspiration on that as well. Now, one thing that I'm interested in, right? So you say you had a pretty rough start to your journey, to your life, and you find out this thing, you know, this definition of success, which is, I think it's very important in life. Most people don't know what their definition of success is, right? But you find this definition of success of being able to pursue your passion and do what you love the most. Now, how do you keep that positivity, you know, that enthusiasm and, you know, the will to keep going, to be happy when, you know, you're struggling, like you say, right? You know, when you're struggling to balance with work and business and photography, as well as, you know, money sometimes can be difficult, right? Especially like, for example, many of the artists right now might be struggling with this bear market who became a full-time NFT artist. How do you balance that out and still find happiness and can move ahead with that in mind?
I'll tell you, so it's up and down. I mean, I am not every day is perfect, you know, but I have to admit that like I wake up very grateful for the opportunity that I have to be able to do what I do. I didn't do this alone, you know, like everyone else has been a part of my journey, my collectors, my friends, everyone has been an advocate for, you know, a support system. And so I'm grateful for everything that I have. And because of that, that is kind of like why I would keep going. You know, it's been 15 years of a bear market. I didn't start really making money in photography until the last couple of years. And I didn't really make any real money until I started trading NFTs and crypto and, you know, selling apes and really establishing my trading portfolio and being able to survive off of that. What I would say is that like, no matter what, I always say, go in head first, don't save anything for the swim, you know, back. And there also is don't put all your eggs in one basket. And I know that's kind of contradictory, but at the same time, you have to kind of flip back and forth. And when you have that, you have to find a balance. And I know that's also contradictory because there really is no balance, right? You have to go in full head first. So it's kind of like, how do you figure it out, right? What I would say is that like, when I discovered crypto, when the pandemic hit and I had to shut everything down, gallery-wise, everything, because there was no way I could survive keeping these places open and I owed money and there was just a very tight situation for me and my family. You know, we were living in a really very small spot. You know, it was really bad. I mean, I was borrowing money from a friend to get my car out of the tow yard. I had to sell my camera, everything to be able to buy into crypto when I first found it. So I sold everything I owned, you know, like everything, so I could buy into crypto. Because when I found it and discovered it during the pandemic, I realized that this was kind of the idea that I had. Because when the pandemic hit, I knew the government wasn't going to pull us out of this. There was nothing that we were going to be able to do in this situation if they cut us off from working. And they weren't going to give us money right away, especially in Nevada. We were the very last to get on the stimulus. So to pay rent, do anything, I had to figure out a way very quickly. And I'm a survivor. This is like my skill set. When I'm put in a tight corner, I'm able to figure things out. And so I would recommend like any artist to try to develop these skill sets where it's like, don't become an artist because you think you're going to make money. You're going to have a very harsh reality where there's very few overnight successes in life. It is going to be a pride swallowing siege of hell trying to get through this. But if you love it, it won't matter because you'll just want to keep doing it. And so I would say that during that situation, I discovered crypto and bought in, you know, bought Ethereum, bought Solana, bought, actually didn't even buy Ethereum at the time. I bought like Solana and all the altcoins when they were really cheap. And then when I found NFTs one night on Clubhouse, I started buying photography. I was like one of the first collectors of photography. I was buying photography left around. I was probably like one of the first guys to spend two ETH on a photo back when nobody was collecting photography. This is like in 2020. And I was like, I was all in on trying to push photography to the next level by buying other people's work. I had ETH. I was able to do it. And I found that really balancing a trading portfolio and not really doing any photography. And I know that's like crazy to say because I'm a photographer, but at the same time, I'm trying to develop, you know, a way to sustain my photography. And if I can't make money in photography, find a trading portfolio, find a way to make money. And so this was my way to make money. I developed a trading portfolio, figured out how to trade, did NFTs, did all this crypto stuff, and then established a way so that I wouldn't have to work anymore, so that I could just focus on my photography. And so I wouldn't even have to really worry about people collecting my work. I could just make art. And that was the whole idea when I got into crypto. I just want to be able to make art and sustain. That's what everyone wants to do when they're an artist. They just want to be able to sustain and be able to make art. And so I would say, like, to any artist, don't put all your eggs in one basket, but also don't save anything for the swing back. So maybe do multiple things. Try to find multiple angles. Try to find ways of income. Maybe it will be in photography. I mean, you know, I would never have been Emmy nominated if I hadn't started like chasing music photography and like going after that. And one day working with Joshua Bell, like that would have never happened had I just tried something new. And I was like, no, I'm a landscape photographer, strictly landscapes. That's it. I'm in and out, man. Like I do burgers and French fries. And it was like, that was it. And if, you know, you can't do everything else, but try new things, try everything, because you never know what's going to stick and what's going to change your entire life. And from, it was always the most off things that I never expected that changed my entire life. So I feel like it's like, how do you stick with something you love? Well, you know, just do it because you love it. And eventually the money will come, and maybe it won't. But the whole point is you're doing what you love, and change it up. Try to find new things. That's the idea, right? Grow every day.
100%. You know, it reminds me of this quote, one of my favorite quote, you know, from Albert Einstein, right? The definition of insanity is expecting the same result, a different result when you do the same exact things, right? And I love what you're doing, you know, because you just went out and try something and keep going. And like you say, right, most people look at you and you say, you know, John was very lucky, and you know, he had an overnight success, and he just told me here, right? And everyone else who's going to listen to this, that it's been a 15 years journey at the very least. Now, going through that 15 years, right, you had a lot of things that going against you. Like you say, you know, your parents are in and out of prison. Your teacher didn't believe in you. You practically don't have anyone believe in you. And you choose a profession that is very famous for being broke, right? Being an artist is not, it's like, you know what? I'm going to be an artist because I'm going to be rich. No, it's say no one ever, right? So one thing that I'm interested in is like, what is the biggest, like, what is the biggest thing that kept you going, that kept you in this journey during your most difficult time, and help you build that confidence, build that self-belief to get to where you are today?
You know, I would say just like, it's weird, but I would say if you've survived a bunch of trauma, I would say it's kind of like having conviction within yourself. And, you know, like we've all been kind of conditioned to not believe in ourselves from our school systems, from, I know like our parents tell us to believe in ourselves and that stuff, but I feel like we all have been kind of conditioned to just be like a part of the system. And I don't know. I think what kind of gave me like the confidence of just believing in myself and chasing what I love was that, I don't know, maybe it was like a cheap way out. It was like, look, if I fail at this, everybody fails at it. So look, guys, like it's like five people that have succeeded at this in life. Like, you know, obviously I was going to fail. So, you know, fuck you. Like, I don't know what it was, but it's just like, I think it's just something again about just like, you find a passion, and that's always so hard for people in life, because it's like, everyone's so afraid of failure, I feel like. You know, we're so afraid that, what if I chase this, I'm going to fail. I've always been under the impression that if I do this, I'm going to be the best at it, because I'm not going to stop until I am. And I know that's like, maybe that's cocky, maybe that's like overconfidence, but in my opinion, like, I just have to tell myself that. Like, I have to tell myself, like, I have this superpower and I have to chase this, because if I don't, I'm going to feel like a failure no matter what, because I didn't do what I thought I could possibly do. And so I think, like, I don't know, there's just something about, I think, growing up in a situation where you were always poised to fail no matter what. There's something about being told constantly that no matter what, you're going to fail, that makes you want to succeed that much harder. And maybe that's, you know, why I've slowed down so much and just kind of started to really enjoy the moments in life, is because I don't really have anybody anymore telling me I can't do something. You know, when I got into NFTs on Clubhouse, I was told photography can never be an NFT. We have to animate our art. We have to do it like people. We have to make digital art. He had just gotten the $80 million sale. Everyone in Clubhouse was doubting us. There was like a few of us. That gave me the ambition to chase it. You know, it was like when I first got into photography and I tried to open, you know, like my work into galleries, and every gallery shot me down saying photography doesn't sell its art. You know, you can only sell it for a few hundred dollars. There's just not really a way to make a living off of it. I drove up and down Monterey, Carmel, all these galleries, and everyone was just like, photography just doesn't sell out here. Like, good luck, kid. And that's what gave me the drive to open up my own gallery. I was like, no, that's not, no one's going to tell me that something can't be done. I'm not, no. So I just can't accept no. So I opened my own gallery with the idea that I'm going to sell photography. And when I found NFTs and I found Clubhouse and I realized that there was so many people doubting this situation, including all the photographers, I was like, found hope. Like, this is my spot. Like, this is obviously where I belong, because I believe that this, like, when I found, like, just to go off on a side note, when I found the blockchain, I believe this was 100% native to photography. I mean, photography is mostly now 99% digital and very few people using film. It is digitally native. It was made for the blockchain. And it was like so perfect and symbiotic. And so when people told me no, I was like, we'll find collectors. It might take a few years, but it's going to happen. I didn't think it would happen like this. I didn't expect all this to blow up, you know, but it was like when I minted my work and put it up at the prices I believed and just didn't really look at the market because there wasn't one, I just went for it, man. And like, I think that's the idea of like how you sustain something that you love, is that just chase objectives, chase, you know, overcome achievements, overcome obstacles. And right now, currently, I'm just enjoying not having any obstacles. It's just enjoying life.
Well, you definitely deserve it, man. I mean, you know, it's been 15 years coming, right? All that, I like to call it the success tax, right? You've paid all that success tax and you get to reap all the benefit now. So, and I love how you take all of this, you know, criticism and put downs, and you take it like an adventure. You know, I know that you love hiking as well. So, you know, it's like when you're going hiking to a viewpoint or going up a mountain, there's always going to be challenges, but you take that, all of that setback as a challenge instead of, you know, as a wall that shut you down. Right. And, you know, without you and a lot of the early adopters of photography in the Web3 space, in the NFT space, you know, we won't have what we have today. But one thing that I'd like to ask you is that, okay, you know, so NFT, Web3, right? A lot of people, even nowadays, are still skeptic about them. It's, you know, it's a scam and all this stuff. Now, what give you the confidence to jump into the Web3 and the NFT? What make you believe that it is the next thing of the, you know, the next iteration for photography and digital art?
Well, you know, it's funny, like when I discovered crypto, you know, it's interesting because like I found, you know, the decentralization, anarchy, and all these different, you know, like self-sovereignty. And I was like, this is so like, this is what I believe in. And as I slowly, you know, developed like my education and, you know, what I really understood about crypto, I realized, you know, there was so much more to crypto and the technology that could really like change the world. But when I found NFTs, I'm going to be honest, like I was like, dude, I'm going to sell some art and make some money. This is amazing. This is a cash grab. We're going to make some money. This is great. And I was like, I got to sell my art immediately. I dove in first, dude. I minted immediately. I didn't even hesitate. Like I just minted because I was like, this is it. Like we're going to be able to to find a new avenue for like making money. As I explored the community, hung out in Clubhouse, spent like a couple of weeks, I started to realize that this was much bigger than us just selling our art and making money, that there was even much bigger than the community, the backbone of the technology for the blockchain to allow us to democratize our art, to share it, to permutize our legacies on the blockchain. There was so much, this was exactly what all of us were working for. You know, it's so hard to create an archival process for a photographer. It's so hard to do all these things, to create collections, to open galleries, to deal with galleries. NFTs, how I saw it, was defeated the middleman. It got rid of the middleman. It got rid of the curator, the gallerist, the collectors who would, you know, mark up and build up a price for an artist, all this stuff. Now, I know it's all happening right now. I know that like collectors are curators and all these things are happening, but it's slowly building into artists are being curators, which should be. That's the truth. Like, it should be artists are curators. I know like a lot of people are like, well, the collectors should be the curators and, you know, they're the ones are collecting, but the artists know the art. The artists know the art. That's what they do. They make art. They should be curating other artists and bringing them in and onboarding them. And I visioned like this beautiful, like, utopia of like artists onboarding other artists, bringing in collectors, working with artists in like this symbiotic relationship where everybody was like getting along and not just pumping bags, but like actually collecting art for the pure joy of cherishing it and putting it on their walls. And I know like we've sidetracked because of like the PFP projects, and you know, we could go into the history on why that all happened. That could take an hour, but it's like the reason it all happened is because of a bull run during a pandemic created by a revolution during art. You know, it was like all these things happened at once that created the chaos that is at today. But I think it will filter out. And what I believe will happen is that art will prevail. And that's what I saw originally when I got onto, you know, NFTs, was that it was the main thing, the main function that I saw was the self-sovereign backbone and the idea that we could really create a legacy on the blockchain that would be there forever. You know, you'd be able to share your work, show it archivally, show when it was created. I think that's so important to artists that don't understand how to do that. It's not capable of doing that. And this really just defeated the middleman from the galleries taking a percentage. I mean, Manifold has proven it by, we don't have to work with Super Rare or Foundation or any platform. You can release your own contract and sell out from, you know, when I did my open edition to Ruben Wu when he did all his open editions. Like, when an artist has created a community and really establish an ecosystem within their market and their art, they're able to cut out the middleman from the auction houses of Sotheby's to Christie's to just being able to do it on their own. And what could be better than that? We're all trying, the dream for an artist is to be able to be sustainable and to be able to create art. They don't want to get rich. They just want to be able to make art. That's all they just want to create. Like, don't get me wrong, some want to get rich. I'm not going to say I don't want. I'm not going to generalize. But for the most part, the artists didn't get in it to make money. They got in it because they love creating art. So therefore, how I see it is that NFTs allow that ability.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's well put. A lot of people kind of, I see that a lot of people are judging what NFT is without understanding it. So I love how you share that perspective. Now, I know that you have two galleries as well. Do you still have the two galleries running at the moment, John, or?
No, I shut them down during when the pandemic hit. There was no way to keep them open, sustain the rent. And honestly, like, yeah, to keep a gallery open is what I would call a time war. It takes literally all of your time and you have no time to shoot anything, do anything. You're running a business. It's the exact opposite of what I wanted to do. And it's the exact opposite of like the reason I got out of running car sales and shit like that. It was like, I don't want to deal with customer service or deal with employees or deal with any of that. So galleries to me was like, it was a beautiful dream of mine, but when I finally got there, it was cornflakes. I didn't really enjoy it as much as I thought it would.
So I love that, you know, and I want you to share that a little bit more. So what was, you know, I think most photographers dream to have galleries, right?
I lights.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, it's so cool. My own photos on my own wall, sort of thing. And yeah, people come and have a look at it. So what does it take to build a gallery? And what's your take? Like, you know, when people say, you know what, John, I want to build a gallery. What do you think? You know, what advice would you give to people who are still pursuing that dream?
Yeah, it's funny when people come to me and they're like, I'm going to build a gallery. Like, I'm really excited about it. And I hate to like just totally destroy their dream. But I'm like, yeah, so I'm just going to give you the truth on all this shit real quick. Like, that was my dream. You know, I went to Vegas. I saw a Peter Lick gallery. And I was like, I'm going to build a gallery one day. I'm going to sell my art on walls and big acrylic prints and, you know, have big collectors. And dude, wow, that was rough, you know. And I'll start like, I opened my first gallery in Vegas when I moved from Tucson, Arizona to Vegas. I had been living in Tucson. It was cheaper. I was doing my photography out there. And I figured I had come to Vegas a couple times to, I wanted to shoot a picture of the strip. I had never shot a city and I needed a city. I wanted lights. I wanted that cool effect. And this was, you know, 10 years ago, 12 years ago. It was in, I'm going to say like 2012 or something like that. And so 2011, so going back and forth, this was like right before the Cosmo was built, maybe 2010, whatever. Right before the Cosmo was built, I had this vision where this tower has the perfect view of everything, the fountain, the strip, all the things I need. So I'm going to go back and forth to Vegas, shoot streets, whatever, figure out what I want to do while I'm there, figure out how I'm going to live there. So I moved to Vegas with the idea that I'm going to be a music photographer and, you know, maybe make some money off of music photography. And I had gone into lounges and seen this musician playing, you know, named Frankie. And I was like, this guy's going to be a headliner one day. If I move to Vegas, I'll be his photographer. And like, that doesn't make any sense. But to me, it made all the sense in the world. I was like, obviously, I'm going to be his photographer and I'm going to be able to make money off of this. And I'll be able to survive and then be able to open the gallery one day by meeting him and he can introduce me to all his friends. Just this crazy, stupid idea, right? This is going to take a minute, but this is going to put into perspective on what it took to get me my first gallery. It wasn't like I just opened up like I was some rich kid that just bought into a gallery. So moved to Vegas, living out of my car because I can't afford a place. And I'm shooting on the strip, like bands locally. And lo and behold, one day that Frankie guy does become a headliner. A couple months into me living in Vegas. So I get into a show and I sneak backstage. I stuck my camera into a show, shot photos, sneak backstage, show him the photos. And I'm like, hey man, this is my work. Do you have a photographer? And he's like, these are amazing. These are some of the best photos. Can you meet me tomorrow for lunch? And I'm like, yeah, I'll meet you tomorrow. And I'm like stoked, dude. I've never even really talked to too many celebrities before. This guy's like, I go to this restaurant the next day. He's got his own menu at the restaurant. Like, I'm like, dude, this guy's huge. Like, what is happening? And he's like, I just got into the Stratosphere Hotel Casino as a headliner. I want you to be my exclusive photographer. Have you ever shot people before? And I'm like, yes, I never have, man. I've only shot. But I'm like, fuck it, dude. You know, like if you're in the champagne room, go with it. No, you know, like act like you've been there before. So like, yeah, man, shot people. Like, no problem. Got you. He's like, what do you want to get paid? And it was a split second decision where it hit me. And I'm like, I don't want to get paid. I want you to network me out and introduce me to everyone you know. Which introduces me to celebrities, executives, everybody, because my goal is not to be your photographer. No offense, man, you're dope, but I need to be my own star and I want to be like a famous photographer who shoots landscapes and own my own gallery. And he's like, okay. He's like, we'll work out a deal. You work for free. I'll introduce you to everybody. You'll get a gallery. You'll do your thing. He introduces me to everybody. I do get a gallery out of this. 6 months into it, I'm shooting for him. Barely making like anything, like sustaining life. Like I'm shooting bands like on the strip for $50, like barely surviving, but I'm surviving. And one day I'm at his house for dinner and there's a guy who walks in, dude looks like Professor X. I'm figuring this guy's rich, can buy my art. That's just immediately, I'm a survivor. I'm like, dude, can buy my art. That just goes in my head. So I start talking to him. Turns out he happens to be the CEO of the Stratosphere and he wants to know, well, he's like, you're not obviously gonna work for this chump for the rest of your life. And he says that to me, he goes, what do you want? What's your dream, your passion? They showed my art on my phone. Well, his wife happens to be a huge landscape photography collector, loves my art. And he goes, do you want to open a gallery? I was like, that's my dream. Like, that's why I moved to Vegas. I'm going to open a gallery one day. I've only been here, you know, 6 months, but that's what's going to happen. And I was like, well, he's like, well, what do you want to do? Like, where do you want to do it? And I'm like, a casino, dude. Of course. He's like, well, do you want to open in mine? And I'm like, yeah, of course. Like, yeah. And I thought he was joking, dude. I didn't think he was serious, but he was. And he offered me a percentage-based rent so that I could not have to pay rent, basically pay rent based on what I sold. And I didn't have enough money to open the gallery to create any type of like, it had to be renovated. Like the whole space hadn't been opened in 15 years. It was the spot, you know, it had to be repainted. So dude, I I pulled everything that I could. I called everybody that I could. I sold as much as I could. I made it happen. Sold a camera, sold everything I could to be able to build out this gallery. Bro, I'm in there at night painting it, doing everything, recarpeting it, everything myself. And I hire a construction crew finally for the stuff that I just can't do. And, you know, we're coming down to like 3 months and everybody comes in. They finish it off for me. This cost me more than I ever could have expected. I'm broke as shit, but I did it. I got my gallery. We opened a grand opening night. They have press, the whole thing, you know, celebrities come from like Vinnie Paul's, Pantera, you know, like all these, like, you know, the Purple Rain, like musicians, like all these dope people that Frankie knew, Joey Fatone, like from that, like everybody, dude, Carrie Top. It was like the coolest thing ever for me. I'm just some kid, man. I didn't know what was going on. And everyone told me I was never going to make it. So opening that was like a huge, like, I think building block for the foundation of like how I believed in myself. But to get to that point was next to impossible. And then next level was like opening the next gallery and trying to create that. But ultimately, when I did all of this, it was all for the wrong reasons. And that's what I found out. And I can't express that enough, that it's like, if you're doing it just because you're trying to prove everybody wrong, you're chasing somebody else's dream, or you think that it's going to make you happy, really look at what you're doing, because you have to deal with employees. You have to deal with accounting. You have to deal with a real life opening a business, city licenses, everything that I never want to deal with. I barely can deal with my own bills, like trying to deal with a business. I didn't want to do it, man. I'm an artist, dude. This is not where my head was at. And I was an entrepreneur, but not in the sense that I wanted someone else to do all that stuff. That's not, so yes, you can hire someone to do all these things, but when you're opening your own company, like an actual art gallery, you can't just hire an art manager and be like, good luck, here's my art, here's the stories. You got to be there. You have to train the people. There's people that call in sick. There's people that don't show up. There's people that get in DUIs and then never show up again. And now you got to rehire all the people all over, and you're stuck in Minnesota for 2 fucking years when you should have only been there for 6 months opening a gallery. But that's the shit that happens. And that is, I think, what I discovered going through all of these, you know, ups and downs and obstacles and addictions and just craziness, was chasing anything else but what you love and really want to do. Even though you think you might want to do it, really analyze and understand what comes with it. Because I'm glad I did it, but don't get me wrong, I don't regret anything, because I would have never learned this and I'd still be going, I want to open a gallery one day. I'm glad I got it out of my system, because, and I'm glad the blockchain showed up, because this is making it so much more available for us to not have to create brick and mortar galleries. And it's funny, side note, but it's like so funny to me when people argue on Clubhouse or on Twitter Spaces how much energy the blockchain used to take. And I'm like, open a gallery for a week and try shipping a print to Dubai. I promise you, that amount of energy, without question, you'll never even come close to consume that amount of energy by sending transactions to the blockchain. Like, we use so much more energy creating these galleries and shipping prints and the acrylic that we use. It's the opposite of what we're talking about and what we're trying to do, which is preservation, protecting the planet. So it's like, it was hand in hand. But I have to say, like, as much as I had the dream of opening a gallery, it was definitely like, when it came down to it and doing it, it was the opposite of everything I ever wanted.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm sure, you know, we all going through that time in our life where we're like, you know, I've been dreaming for this, I wanted this, and then you get there and you feel like, okay, this is not the utopia that I'm looking for. And, you know, so here you are, you know, you find that out the hard way. And of course, you know, at the end of the day, it's good to kind of go through it, because like you say, otherwise you lie on your dying bed and you ask yourself, what if, right? And it's one of the reasons why we should pursue our passion. So that's awesome, man. That's what a story. It's so inspiring, you know, to hear all that, and the amount of dedication, persistence, and just conviction that you put on your art and your journey. It's absolutely inspiring. So
thanks, man.
Now, yeah, man, it's wow. Just like hearing it, I'm just like, wow. Like,
I mean, I got into it to put art on my walls. You know, it was like, I want landscape art on my walls. How do I make that happen? I didn't think it would turn into this.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. So you've done a whole lot of photography, not only landscape. You did music, you did people
Weddings
and,
or it's
well, even
simple.
weddings as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, and weddings.
What is your favorite out of all that? What is your favorite genre of photography and why?
Oh, outdoor landscape all day, 100%. I mean, I do love music photography in the sense that, like, I got to meet the rock star idols that, like, I loved their music. It wasn't even about, like, the idea. Like, that was cool, shooting for rock stars and being on stage and, like, all these things. But it was genuinely, like, I'm a fan of the music. I love music. And so, like, being able to just, like, collaborate and, like, shoot and listen to the music live, dude, I got free concerts out of it. There was nothing better. So that was always like one of the coolest, and I enjoyed studio photography for a bit, like shooting, like, you know, models or like creating scenes that I enjoyed. Like, that was always fun, but ultimately it just kind of like turned into, like, I never published any of it. I never really did much with it. It was for me. Like, I really kind of created art my whole life for me. It wasn't to sell it. I have so much studio photography. I never charged anybody for it. I rented lights and, you know, Hasselblads and Phase Ones, and I just, it was just fun. I just enjoyed it. So, like, I would say ultimately, though, like, my favorite thing in the world is going out into the wilderness, you know, for a week by myself in the middle of nowhere and just, you know, taking photos and, you know, just traveling, man. That's one of the best feelings, is just seeing places and cultures and seeing things that just I never thought I would ever see in a lifetime.
And I can totally relate to that. I think, you know, with landscape photography, you get this special feeling, you know, a special calmness and therapeutic and, you know, meditation within that that you can't get from anything else. Yeah, I can totally relate to that. Man, you know, it's been crazy, you know, hearing your story and how you get to where you are today. And what was some of the hardest moment? Have you ever had a moment where you felt like, you know what, this is it, I'm just gonna give it up? Or have you always had that conviction and belief that no matter how hard it gets, you just be like, you know what, this is just another challenge, and, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel is gonna be there eventually? Have you ever had a moment like that at all, John?
Dude, I can't even count the moments where I just wanted to give up, and how many times I've just said, maybe I'm not meant to be a photographer. Just like one instance, you know, when I was 5 years into photography, I had not really sold like one print. I was just trying to survive, you know? And I said to this famous photographer at the time, I said to him, I haven't sold any art. Am I even meant to be a photographer? Is my art even good enough? And he looked at me and said, if you have to ask, no. And that hit hard, because what it meant is not him just being a dick, because that was a dick answer, but it was a point that he was trying to prove, which was, are you doing it for the money? Are you doing it because you want people to collect your art? Are you doing it because you actually like taking photos? And if you actually like taking photos, do you give a shit whether people buy your art or whether they like it? And it was like, oh yeah. I really don't care whether or not anybody wants to buy my art, whether or not anybody likes it, because this is for me. This is for my walls. I didn't produce this for somebody else's wall. I did it because I couldn't afford landscape photography, and I wanted that shit on my wall so I could do it. So I did it. And that was all there is to it. So I think, like, we forget, you know, we don't stay curious, and we forget, and we get stuck in our ways. And I always go back to that, because there has been so many times, I mean, shit, dude, when I moved to Minnesota and hit rock bottom and wanted to give up photography, when I've sold my cameras to pay rent. You know, just recently, over 2 years ago, when I bought into crypto, sold all my cameras and got really good at trading and was making so much money that I was like, maybe I shouldn't do photography anymore. And then NFT showed up, and full circle, I'm right back into where I started. So I feel like the universe will pull you to where you need to go. And I know that's kind of like the most corny shit to say, but it's a fact. It just does, because it has happened to me so many times where I'm like, I'm done with photography. I have to make money. I have to help my family survive. And then it gets pulled right back in. I mean, who the fuck would have thought that I would get into stock trading and crypto and then all of a sudden discover a Clubhouser while running Flat Earth Scientology rooms on Clubhouse as a joke trolling at night, and all of a sudden find a photography NFT room and get sucked right back into my trading knowledge, my knowledge in photography galleries, and put it right back into a full circle use 6 months later. And it's cyclical. And the universe will pull you right back to where you're supposed to go. And maybe I wasn't meant to be a photographer. Maybe I was just, you know, like, who knows what I was meant to do. But what I do know is that every single time I try to quit or go, I can't do this anymore, I get sucked right the fuck back in because it's a passion. It's an obsession. And I think a lot of artists are addicts, you know, and that's, I really believe that because the majority of the people that I've met that, and I didn't know a lot of artists before Clubhouse and this whole scene, the majority of us are addicts. We get obsessed over shit, whether it be Twitter spaces, Twitter, tweeting, likes, Clubhouse, whatever it may be, we all get addicted to something. And so I would say to those that are discouraged or want to give up, the best thing you could do is what I learned recently, which is start from scratch. You ever heard of like someone who is allergic to food and they can't figure out what they're allergic to? So they just start from the bare bones of literally making potatoes, and they bring in carrots and they bring in cucumbers. They slowly bring in things until all of a sudden they're sick again. So I would say start from the bare bones again. I deleted Twitter a couple weeks ago. I deleted all social media because I was just down. I was just not feeling it. There's a lot of toxicity in the space. It was fucking with my head. And I'm like, this is not fun anymore. And if it's not fun, I'm out. So deleted everything, started from scratch. Not shooting anymore. Just literally waking up in the morning, working out, swimming, getting healthy, eating healthy. And all of a sudden, I'm feeling that thirst to get back into Twitter, to get back into spaces and starting to become fun again. I'd say throw everything away and start over again. Starting from scratch is one of the best things that I think we don't realize that we have the capability of doing as humans. We can start and adapt very quickly to anything, which very few animals on this planet can do that. But as humans, we're capable of adapting. And I feel like failure is something that we need to try harder and strive harder for. Fail faster, because the faster you fail, the quicker you're going to get to actually being successful. There's a girl named Rachel Wood who says this on Spaces, and I love it when she says that, fail faster. I love that. Because it's the truth. Fail faster. I have learned so much more from my failures than I have from my successes. And I will continue, I think, to fail because it ultimately gets me to that point of success. And I know I say success is just continuing to fail to do what you love. And that really is it. Just do what you love. And eventually you will find what makes you happy. And if that is what makes you happy, is literally doing what you love, you're already made. You're successful. And so, yeah, I continue to preach to all the artists because it's like a lot of artists within the space, they've been there for like 2 or 3 years and they're like, I haven't sold anything. And it's like, bro, wait till you've done this for 15 years, opened up multiple galleries, had people shit all over your art, laugh at your art, telling you you can't, you have no Photoshop skills, that you're terrible, that I could take this on my iPhone, all that shit. Go through it all. Come back to me 15 years later, then tell me your art isn't selling. I'll have sympathy then, maybe. But right now, grind it out, because it's not easy. It's all about learning the conviction within yourself. And when you find that, it won't matter how much art you sell, because you'll be stoked that you continuously make art.
Man, hallelujah.
Amen.
Geez, you know, you just dropped a whole lot of wisdom there. And I love how you say, you know, about fail and, you know, embracing fail, because I feel like it's impossible to have success without fail. It's just part of the journey. And you know, it really opens up the perspective. You know, you say this, that nowadays with everything that we have on our hand, on our laptop, and everything that come, you know, the next day, next hour, right? All of these services, we are so used to, you know, overnight success, right? And we are expecting that. And you know, people are expecting to see that, especially in the NFT world, you know, from the bull run that we had. And I love that what you say there, you know, like, well, if you haven't sold any NFT yet, you know, in the past 2-3 years, like, grind it out.
Don't have expectations, just be prepared. That's what I always say in any situation. It's like, don't expect shit. You don't deserve anything. Let's be honest. None of us deserve anything. We're not entitled to anything. This entitlement shit, it needs to end. It's not about deserving. It's about earning. And therefore, don't expect. Just be prepared for the worst and for the best. And ultimately, you'll probably come out ahead because of that.
That is so well put. No, that's awesome, man. I love it. I love that. What a wisdom that you have, you know, you have put together in this past 15 years in this journey. And I'm just so happy that I met you today or, you know, yesterday. Literally, I mean, this is what I love about the Web3.
I love it.
Just exchange message and now I'm here with you.
I mean, that's what's so cool. Dude, that's what's so cool about the Web3 space. It's like you can message someone and they're just like, yeah, let's vibe.
100%. Now, I want to ask you this one thing, right? You know, when you get into the Web3, I feel like one of the coolest thing about the Web3 that separates from the Web2 or, you know, the traditional way of doing things. Of course, you know, the technology there, you know, the provenance and the ability for us to track as an artist, so forth. But one of the most powerful thing that I see in the Web3 is community and collaboration, right? I feel like in the past, there has been a lot of competition, a lot more competition. And, you know, there is still some of that in the Web3, right? But I see a lot more collaboration, a lot more people working together with each other to make things happen. And what do you see? What's your definition of community, of you know, of community and collaboration? Because I know that a lot of people are throwing that words out there without you know, a deeper meaning behind that. So I'd love to hear your take on this.
Yeah, you know, well, let's just go back in history to 2021, a decade ago in Web3. You know, that collaboration and community is, you know, the ape market is what it is today because of collaboration and community. I think a lot of people forget that because it's just like a bunch of Wall Street bet pumps and it's like just craziness. But before that, the only utility to the apes was a bathroom wall that you could write on. And that was it, like in pixels. And the apes weren't worth shit. They were worth $200 and nobody cared. It was just fun. It was just a fun thing. But what created the market today with the derivatives, you know, like when we got the apes, immediately opened up a Clubhouse room and then all the artists started, you know, all the Clubhouse artists started making derivatives, you know, like immediately it was just like, you know, Dario and like, I think Sabet and like JR, like all these guys were just making like all these different drips. I don't know Sabet, some name dropping on this shit, just artists, okay? Like artists in general, they were just like, they were going to town, man, making derivatives. And that's like, everybody was so pumped about this because you had the IP for the ape, so you could do that. And this is where the collaboration, the community came in, because we'd hold these rooms for 10 hours a day, just talking, making ape noises, raiding rooms, you know, going into Gary V's room. We got blocked by Dane Cook one night for raiding his room. Like, we would take over a stage and like, Farouk at the time, like he was like, you know, really famous on Clubhouse. So like he would jump into a room and they would immediately mod him. And then he would bring us all up on stage slowly. And then he would use like a you know, a code word like banana. And all this would change our PFPs to apes. And we'd be like, ooh, ooh, ah, ah, like just screaming. Like my Mike's 4-year-old daughter at the time was just like in the other room, just like I was thinking, dude, she's going to grow up thinking her fucking dad is insane. Like he's on conference calls just screaming like an ape at 4 a.m. And it was like, but this is what created the entire community around the apes, the market. What you see today, what pumped it to 150 ETH, that was the market. That was celebrities buying bags from markets that we created by just a community of us just having fun. We never expected this to happen. We didn't pump them like this is our bags, everybody should buy them. It was us raiding rooms, celebrities seeing them, you know, derivatives flying everywhere, being able to use it for whatever you wanted. That was the core of the NFT community that created the pump and dump market that exists today. But the pump and dump market was just based on that fuel, that bull run. Where you see money will come scams. And I think right now, like you said, the community is so different. The collaboration definition is so different because it's not what it was on Clubhouse. It's not artists getting together and using each other's art to collaborate. You would have never seen that 100 years ago. But now you see that, right? Because all of a sudden we were artists during the pandemic, lonely as shit, found each other as a bunch of other artists and said we should collaborate to be able to sell our art. That was all it was. It was like a beautiful moment. So when you think about what's transitioning today, which is, you know, this ultra trading zone, you know, everyone trying to get their bags, it's a moment. It's a blip within the art community. It's a blip within the revolution of, you know, what is art? You know, it's the Renaissance, right? It's what we call it, a digital Renaissance. It was a beautiful time when art was just literally, all of us were just trading gas back and forth. We weren't trading, like, we were trading ETH. There was no collectors. We would just buy each other's work, and you would release something your friend would buy, and then he'd release something you'd buy it back. It was just like this funny thing. So it's like the community back then is so different than it is, but it will, I think, transition back into what it was. It may not be the ultra, you know, small community that it was back then, but I think, you know, the core definition of what the collaboration and community was what you saw historically. It was what created the ape market today. That is, I think, the epitome of what the NFT community can do, is they just get together, they have a bunch of fun, and all of a sudden a project's worth, you know, $1 million. And that's what's so crazy, I think, is like, that was just a bunch of artists hanging out on a virtual space, talking back and forth. I mean, you know, Pranksy owned 10% of the collection at the time. You know, Blau had bought, you know, 100 of them and was giving them away on Clubhouse. It was a crazy time back then. And it was like, it was just for the love of it. It wasn't for the money, because there was no real good money in it. It was just a good time. We were just artists having fun. And I feel like, yeah, the community has been lost to this narrative of pump and dumps, but that was the core definition of what it was, man.
Yeah, man. I feel like this is a good kind of conclusion to you know, the whole conversation we had today about passion, about love, right? When you have a love and we pour it into that one thing, you never know where it's gonna go. And this is the one example where a community of people just, you know, sharing, hanging out, doing what they love the most, and then it grows out of it, right? And I mean, we never would have expected where it kind of go, but it does, and it's amazing,
you know, bro. Like,
so man, like,
the Bored Apes, just like, so like the reason we used them as PFPs and like started wearing them is because at night, you know, we would get bored. Like during Clubhouse days, we would spend 6 hours a day on Clubhouse convincing everyone that crypto wasn't a scam, that NFTs were real, and that we were artists actually being able to survive off of NFTs. We were onboarding people all day long. We were answering questions every day. Can I get a foundation invite? Like, it was always the same questions. How does this work? And do they own the rights to your work? And can they print it? Like, it was always the same every day. We were literally like the ask advice help for like the NFT world. And so at night, to blow off steam, we would put on like cop avatars or like, you know, animal avatars and go raid rooms. Like, we put on cops and like put on sirens and go just take over a room. So when the apes came out, we were like, well, yo, at least we own these identities. At least we own these avatars. Let's do something with these in raid rooms. So that's how, like, that whole thing started, with us just answering questions on Clubhouse and being bored at night and blowing off steam by creating, you know, a raid of, you know, a troll. Like, we were just a bunch of trolls, just literally just creating a stupid market that we never thought would actually take.
Yeah, man, that's, you know, I love how it builds a community. And I feel like now, you know, with this quote-unquote bear market, I feel like this definition of community is actually strengthened again, because, you know, during the bull market, everyone just saying it without a meaning behind it. But now the people who are still here, I feel like the people who probably will be here for a long, long time, you know, because this is the toughest in the market right now. So yeah, very, very, glad to see, you know, that I'm still part of it, that we are still part of it. You know, 'cause we know that it's going to be there for a while. But John, man, it's been such a great interview. I have so much wisdom, so much, you know, inspiration coming out of you. So thanks a lot for sharing a lot of that. Thanks a lot for opening up and sharing some of the difficult stories that, you know, coming through your life. I know it's not easy to be vulnerable sometimes and open up. So it's a big inspiration for me to hear a lot of that. One question that I always ask, you know, all of my guests in the podcast, is that if you have one single advice that you could give, that you would live off, or, you know, that you would give to your younger self, what would that one advice be?
Hard to say, because it's like, my younger self would have never listened to me. My younger self would have been like, bro, go fuck yourself. Who are you? But I, you know, like, if I could give like some advice to the kids, it probably would never listen either way. But, you know, I would say be patient. And I know it's like the hardest thing as a kid, but be patient, because we all want that instant gratification. We've been raised to get it. You know, we have instant internet, instant videos. We don't have to go to the video store. We don't have to go to the music store to buy music. Everything's instant. So we all want that instant success. We all want to, you know, if everyone sees a YouTube influencer's instant success, we all want it. Why do you want it? To get rich, okay? All I can say, be patient, man. All of it will come in due time. You will learn along the way. If you just got all this success at once, you're gonna waste it. If I had gotten all the success at like in my 20s or 30s, I promise you, I would have blown it all away at some strip club partying because I was a child. I'm glad that I got this success as I got older, because I know now what I want to do with it and how I want to change things for my life and my family and my legacy. So be patient. And the second thing, save nothing for the swim back. It sounds crazy and your parents will never tell you to do that. Save nothing, man. Go all in, because if you don't risk it all, you will never find out if it was worth it. You'll always go, I could have done this much more and maybe I would have made it. I can tell you at almost 40 years old, that leads to regrets. And you don't want that shit in your life. So do everything you can to make something work. If you really love it, save nothing for the swim back.
That is one hell of an advice right there. And 100%, man. I think, you know, if we always look back, I mean, it's important to look back and assess and learn from it. But if we always look back, how the hell we know where we want to go, you know? We're probably going to hit a tree or something, right?
Yeah, you know, you might not know your direction. You might not know exactly where you want to go. That might be the case. But if you follow what you love, you follow your heart, you'll eventually get to where you're going. I never knew where I was going, dude. I had no direction. Did not know where I wanted to be with my photography, but I followed what I love. And it eventually led me into getting Emmy nominated, 2 galleries, and, you know, ultimately being able to sell my art to sustain my lifestyle. So I think it's a tribute to being able to just follow what you love. And look, you may never, ever sell your art, but if you're doing what you love every single day, you're getting up, you're doing it because you love it, I don't think that necessarily matters. I think that's just a bonus. Because I know, like, as someone, everyone could go, well, that's easy, bro. You just sold, you know, a fortune worth of art last year. You're happy. I can tell you that hasn't changed anything. Like, yes, it has changed my life in the sense that, like, I'm able to not stress about money. But that hasn't changed my lifestyle. That hasn't changed me. That hasn't changed who I am. I'm not different because of that. You can ask almost anybody that met me on Clubhouse from day one to who I am today after selling all the apes and everything. I'm the same asshole that I was 2 years ago, and nothing has changed. And I have to, like, really, like, emphasize it. You can't let money change you. You have to find that balance. And therefore, if you find what you love before you find an income for it, you'll find that conviction within yourself to just keep going no matter what. And then you'll decide whether or not you want to do it for the money or because you want to do it because you love it.
100%. I feel like money is just a multiplier, you know. If you're passionate, and money will help you with your passion. If you're greedy, you're just become greedier, you know. So
yeah, 100%. It was Johnny Cash who said it best, you know, money, the only thing money did for me is now I don't have to stress about money. Everything else still stresses me the fuck out.
Well, John, it's been a really good conversation, man. Thanks a lot for being here, sharing your wisdom and all of this story. It is so, it's very inspiring to hear your journey. Now, for the people who want to learn more about you and connect with your work, with your story, with your journey, what is the best way for them to find you?
You could just go to my website. You know, my name, janoff.com. You can go to my Twitter, johnnofphotos. But that's pretty much all available online. Just, you know, Google me. There's another John Knopf out there that's like a billionaire that started a pharmacy. Shout out to him. He bought my book and my art. Love that guy. Love all the John Knopfs out there. They're good people. We've actually like collaborated, a bunch of us. So we're all friends. But, you know, the majority, like, there's just me and the other John Knopf on Google. So if you just Google us, you'll find one of us.
No way. That's actually really cool. I
hit him up like 5 years ago, bro. And I was like, hey, not doing so good in this art thing. I saw you're a billionaire. Wanted to ask some advice, man. You're another John Knopf. Figured, you know, we're brothers, homies. And he literally responded. He's like, yeah, what up? And we started chatting. He's like, I bought your book and some art. I was like, dude, this is so wild. Yeah, so I started reaching out to other John Knopf's and like meeting them and stuff. I met another one in Minnesota. We're friends. We smoked weed together. It was pretty cool.
So you got the John Knopf club now.
Oh, John Knopf club. Like, quick side story. I moved to Minnesota, could not find weed. Googled John Knopf in Minnesota, found one on Facebook, messaged him, and I was like, hey, bro, just moved to Minnesota, looking for some weed. You got any? He's like, yeah, actually, I do. I went over to his apartment. Dude is driving the same car I'm driving back in, like, my hometown. And I'm like, get to his house. Dude has weed. He's like, got you, bro. Like, we're friends. I was just like, this is just... And he comes to my gallery opening. Like, he shows up. My sister meets him. And I'm like, this is John Knopf. And she's like, shut your fucking mouth. So I have no way. I love the John Knopf stuff.
That is awesome. That is awesome. Yeah. Well, John, you know, thanks a lot for this. A lot of info, a lot of you know, inspiration in this. And Wikihunters, for those of you who are listening, you know, check out his work. Check out his account. He put together some of the most amazing photos out there, some of the most amazing art out there. And you know, as you hear in this podcast itself, he's such an inspiring person, inspiring voice in this space. So make sure you follow him, connect with him, and learn a thing or two from him. And be patient, like John said, be patient. It will come in due time. All right. Well, thanks a lot for tuning in, and I'll see you guys next week. Thanks a lot, John, and I'll catch you next time.
Bro, thank you so much for this. This was incredible.